All right. Good morning, everybody. Thank you all. Good morning. Can I hear a response? All right. There we go. I'd like to invite you or say hello first off. My name is Cameron Fuller. I'm with Catapult Systems, and my clicker is not working. All right. And today's session is focused on Operations Manager. So if you have no interest in Operations Manager, probably not the session that you're looking for. Let me start with a quick poll out here. How many people out here are actively using some form of Operations Manager at this point in time? I love this crowd. I did this same session, slightly altered, in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Recently. And what I found very interesting is in Kuala Lumpur, they don't bring any equipment with. They sit there and they listen the entire time. It's very different from how we do things in America. But on the other side of it is if you ask a poll question, no one will raise their hand. So, and I saw the earlier presenters and how they handled it, and they tried to get poll questions answered. So I started theirs with the reverse. I asked them, I said, how many of you raise your hand if you do not use Operations Manager? I'm like, all right. So they answered it well. So, I also did this in Bern, Switzerland, and it was a great session over there, and I've had a lot of fun with this because what I found is operations administrators, like what we do on a daily basis, we're all the same. We're all fighting the same battles. We're all doing the same types of things out there, and this session is really all about that group. This session is about you that are sitting in the audience. Right now, what you're going to find is you may be sitting next to the person who has content on a slide that I'm going to be showing, because this is about what Microsoft is advancing in. This is about what the community is building. This is what other administrators like you out there are doing on a daily basis. So my challenge to you first is take an eye on this, watch it and see for your organization what would be, you know, is there a good question you'd like to ask, a next step associated with it. I'm going to ask you to hold your questions until the end, and I'm going to bribe to ask you to hold your questions to the end. So I've got two copies of the Operations Manager Unleashed book, which are pre-devalued, which means signed by me. Yeah, if you check it on eBay, it actually is a lower number, which is kind of funny. And if you want to raise the value of it, Pete Zerger is actually doing a book signing with me. I think it's 12:30 today, so you can bring this with and get it, you know, increased in value that way. So our agenda for today is jam-packed. There's a lot of different things we're going to try to talk about. We're going to be doing some demoing today. We're going to showcase a few things that you may not have seen yet. So just to give some teasers up front, we're going to be showing a PowerShell script written actually by somebody who's sitting in the audience right now that fixes an Operations Manager issue that we've had since 2007 released. We're going to be showcasing the brand new dashboard widgets and a whole new configuration that nobody's seen with the PowerShell gadgets and how to interoperate with those different gadgets. So we're going to show a whole lot of different stuff. But I wanted to start with an overview of where we are, how we got here. So starting with a quick walk through this. I'm going to completely disregard 2007, 2005, and everything else on the assumption that most people don't really want to hear this as a history lesson. You want to know what's most relevant. Quick secondary poll question. How many people out there are running 2007? Okay, so not many. Good. We're going to go light on this. So most of you should be aware of 2012 or 2012 R2. There were four big pieces that they added in 2012. The new network monitoring capabilities associated with the EMC Smarts acquisition that Microsoft did, APM around .NET, sort of around J2E. We'll talk about that. Architectural changes, increased scalability through the RMS removal with the RMSE, and an integrated dashboard solution. With SP1, they added four new pieces as well. Global service monitoring, the ability to do external tests of your websites, both a ping level as well as a Visual Studio file that you can actually record and execute. APM extensions for SharePoint, TFS integration in IntelliTrace that allows you to be able to take your alerts out of Operations Manager for APM and bring them into your TFS structure, because most developers that I talk to really, really don't want to hang out in the Operations Manager console. Personally, I don't understand it. I live there, but hey. R2 evolution, we added four new extensions here as well. Brand new agent, Unix and Linux, new scalable agent. A blog post that I did actually broke down the memory requirements associated with it, about half of what we saw before. They renamed the Microsoft agent to the Microsoft monitoring agent, which will become clear as to why here in a couple of slides. They released APM for Java, the real ability to be able to do the deep dive APM that we're used to for .NET, but within Tomcat-specific versions. And then they also integrated System Center Advisor. With UR2, They actually released new functionality here as well. So how many people in the audience saw the dashboard demo where they demonstrated all the 11 widgets? Okay, so maybe about a quarter of the audience. So I'll make that reference or upfront that recommendation. There's a session, it's recorded, the PowerPoints are out there. They did a phenomenal job of laying out each of these different widgets, what they do, how to use them, and all the rest of it. Very good content. And I'd like to also show or throw a shout out to the crew that wrote that at Microsoft, because we've been yelling for new widgets for ages. So seeing those 11 are a real great addition to the community. So thank you all who did that. Now Microsoft also brought in a couple of new announcements that you may or may not have caught, depending upon which sessions you've been attending this week. The first is what I call a gotta have, Office 365 Management Pack. You gotta be able to know what's going on in Office 365. So the session number is up there. If you're interested in it, definitely check that one out. There's gonna be a good ability to be able to monitor those. And the second part is the new System Center Advisor. There's details on that one. That's actually, it was announced earlier. There's details on an upcoming session a little bit later on today. I've included one of the screenshots that they had with this. So they're beginning to show us how we can take operational data and use the cloud to our benefit within all of that. So that brings us to the concept of futures in how Microsoft is going about monitoring. I'm used to the graph on, let's see, my right. Left, whatever, confusing from up here, stage left, stage right. The operations manager or system center console, those are the types of dashboard systems that we've seen for ages. We're very familiar with them. On the other side of the screen, you can see monitoring in Azure. It actually is not the same, obviously, but there's a lot of similarities to it. And what I'm seeing with internal to Microsoft is it seems that operations manager obviously is going to evolve. It's going to change. They're going to see a whole lot of new areas where monitoring becomes relevant. I did a blog post before this where I went through and I found each of the different technologies that are not operations manager that are monitoring related. And I would say that that's a good thing to start looking into all of the different pieces. Monitoring will exist regardless. We're also beginning to see this in the APM side of things. So we're familiar with the APM configuration within Operations Manager, the ability to be able to see the alerts, the details of what's going on, what's going wrong within that. They also recently announced Application Insights. So Application Insights, behind the scenes, when Microsoft spent this coding time in the R2 release, they released a new version of the Operations Manager agent with a new name. I couldn't figure out for the life of me what the benefit was. They changed the service name, which means, by the way, if you're implementing 2012 R2, you now need to change your antivirus configurations. So remember that one. So that's new exclusions that you have to do associated with that. New service names and things like that. New control panel icons. So all of those things that have altered. But the reason why they did it is they created this agent, so now they have the ability to take data from a system that is not necessarily reporting to Operations Manager and push that information up into Application Insights. So APM in the cloud, for lack of a better description. As a quick bonus tip here, so there's not a lot of people in here that are 2007s. It sounds like we got a lot of 2012s. But I will tell you from personal experience living this battle, I highly recommend not doing an in-place upgrade if you can avoid it. And the reason why, and I don't really list it on the slides, is that if you have any problem with the process, so each of the steps here, so you got to get it to 2007 R2 CU7, upgrade it to there to RTM, to SP1, SPM to R2, and then actually UR2 on top of that later. If you get a failure at any step of those, it's catastrophic and you end up restoring back. So I had a client where we actually went in to do their upgrade in a test environment. We did all the steps. We were upgrading the last management server to 2012 R2, and it crashed, and we ended up having to restore all the virtuals back to where we started from. So long story made a little bit shorter is multi-home migration is definitely the way to go. Marnix Wolf is all over this as well and talking about how you go through that and his recommendations as well. So all of that was history, just to kind of get you where we're at. I want to talk briefly about Operations Manager as a framework, and then we're going to start deep diving into some of the other technical pieces of this. So for those of you who have been using Ops Manager for a while, you're probably very familiar with this concept. So Ops Manager does a very good job taking information about something and generating a health model for it. So as an example, we'll take a simple one like a Windows computer. Windows computer's got four KPIs. We can determine the health of a computer based upon that. But Microsoft's health models start very simple, and they can evolve into a very comprehensive picture where we can see, you know, as an example, within the Windows operating system one, I can tell queuing associated with drives. I can tell disk defragmentation. I can see, you know, processor utilization, all that type of stuff that we expect. It's a much more in-depth health model. Now, the reason why I mention that is that that health model is what we're going to be using to be able to take information such as Office 365. So we can take information for Office 365, put it into the health model, and use this. I've got a client who's using, they were only Oracle and Java applications, and we actually used Operations Manager to monitor their environments with basically no Microsoft components. So realize that the framework does all of this type of technology, and that's what we can extend off of. So I mentioned processor disk, memory, and network. We can go through this concept. The framework can be not only just a server, but it can also be taken down to an individual disk level where we can determine health associated with a disk. And then what's more important is that we can take it up to a larger level. So we can look at it from a large-scale distributed application perspective. So I can see an Exchange server, and I can see for that Exchange server if it's healthy, but I can also look at Exchange as an app and figure out if it's healthy. Now, all of that is very vanilla, I know. Y'all have been doing Operations Manager for a while. I'm sure you are well aware of that. So let me go through a couple of extreme examples of what you can do with the Operations Manager framework. I'm going to do three of them here. First, old school here, and Jacob is actually here, the guy who wrote this, and Alex is here, also the guy who's in this picture right now. They wrote a coffee pot monitoring management pack, which used a camera to determine coffee levels and generate alerts in Ops Manager if you reached critical thresholds associated with coffee. Dead serious. As a second one that I didn't include a screenshot for, I have a client that they were responsible for one core line of business application, and they had the alert. It was the, oh my gosh, drop whatever you're doing, it's the alert. They had a disco ball. They fired a disco ball when that alert went off, because it's really hard to not notice when you're in the middle of an IT department and a disco ball fires off. Saying. Second one, which I thought is a good one. I'm personally biased on this one, I will admit, and it's taken many years to actually give you a practical example of why you would ever want to use this, is the Kinect integration. So the screenshots you see here are from a YouTube video that's out there right now. If you search on Operations Manager and Kinect, I demonstrated this years ago at the Microsoft Management Summit. The person that you see there waving and directing was actually using a Kinect to be able to go through, find an issue that was occurring within a live map, execute a resolution to that situation, and then close it out. Did all of that through a Kinect. Now, I will admit, when I did that, I could see no practical reason anyone would ever want to do it. I was at the MVP Summit, and the guys just kind of threw that idea out, and I was like, that would be cool. Now, I saw an actual practical implementation of this recently at the Minnesota data center that Microsoft has. They have a glassed-in data center, and they've got a projector that actually projects to the side of the glassed-in area, so you can actually project different dashboards on it. So they have various Operations Manager dashboards, and they're working on a Kinect integration so you can go up and wave and move through the different dashboards and interact with it outside of the data center. You got to admit that's cool. And then finally, my favorite one recently. If you think you can't do X, Y, or Z with an Operations Manager, how about actually tracking and trending off of your Nest home thermostats? This is a classic example of the community. Dieter, Dieter out of Belgium, just recently got his MVP award. I don't think it was specifically related to this, but who knows? Maybe Nest liked him and put in a good word. But what this actually does is he's got a whole integration pack to be able to allow you to pull that data, report, and see it, and he actually has live videos that shows how it works. So the Operations Manager framework, if anything I want to leave on before we get into the more technical pieces of this, I wanted to leave you with the idea that this is an extendable framework that the question, if you get asked the question, can I do this? 99% of the time, the answer is yes. Now, for those of us who deal with it on a daily basis, we also know that yes may mean really complex, non-intuitive at times, potentially, but still yes. So with that, we're going to move into the daily surviving as an Operations Manager Administrator. Maintenance and tuning. How do we live and breathe this every day? The first one is, if you have not seen this management pack, I cannot more highly recommend this as a download. Tao Yang, who is, I believe, out of Australia, has written the Operations Manager Self-Maintenance Management Pack. This allows you to be able to do all the type of stuff that you would want to be able to do, that I actually kind of wish Microsoft had included some of these. Things such as, I want to do an automated backup of my management packs on my environment on a daily basis. I want to turn proxy on for all the systems in this. I want to detect alerts that should be closed. These types of things, removing disabled objects. There's a list of multiple different things that he's put in here. He's done a beautiful job with this pack. And just so you're, you know, in case you're worried, I'm going to add it to my environment. It's going to start doing all this stuff. It does nothing out of the box. It's all enabled by overrides. So you can add it and then enable the particular features that you're looking for. On to agent proxy for a minute. Now, I'll do my quick little tirade on proxy here. Proxy, in theory, is a really cool idea. What this says is, I want to take, anytime an agent's reporting in, it can only report things that are relevant to this agent downward. So that it enables the idea that we should never be able to have an object report about something that it shouldn't know about. Because in theory, it could be a security ability, so for somebody to throw something in there that they don't want to. So it sounds like it's a really, really good idea. But as you all know, if you're living and breathing this, you've seen this, you need to have it for the SQL management pack, the Exchange management pack, the IIS management pack, the list goes on and on. Domain controllers, pretty much almost everything out there ends up using proxy. So there's two approaches you can take on this, or a few different approaches you can take on this. You can use Tau's pack, which will just automatically set it. Kevin Holman's got an article associated with this as well that you can use, or you can take the manual approach, which is fine. Every time you add an agent that needs it, it will give you an alert. You can change the setting associated with it and move that way. So there's an option for it. I personally, especially in lab environments and things, I just automatically set it for everything. It just makes life so much easier. Quick trick on finding updated management packs. Now, we're probably well aware of the online catalog. There are some packs that are only available in the catalog, and I mentioned that later on as well. The second one you may not have seen yet, and I don't know if this is officially what Microsoft is doing with this or if this is just kind of what the effect of it has been so far, but the management pack wiki seems to get management packs before the catalog or before the built-in wizard that you can use within Operations Manager. So when I'm looking for something brand new, I'm going to check the wiki to see if there's something out there. So it's a good trick to keep an eye on. And then there is a PowerShell example where you can actually do checking on what packs are out there as well. So far, everything has been discussion. I want to go ahead and show you a pretty cool example of where the community has stepped up to fix something that we have dealt with in Operations Manager for a while now. All right, allow me to show you an environment here, one moment. This is a real world story. I have a client who, great group, but they have a management pack or series of management packs that they have built over years. Multiple different Operations Manager administrators, people handle things differently and the rest of it. You've seen, how many people here know what happens when you create an override, you put it in the wrong pack, and then you delete that override? Does anybody know what I'm talking about there? Where's the problem? Yeah, we live that, right? So what happens is it leaves behind an obsolete dependency. So what I'm gonna show you is, I have an example here. It's a PowerShell script written by Matt Doust, who's actually sitting in the audience right now. And I'm gonna run the PowerShell script, and I'm going to pass it the name of a file, which I have nicely, and for good reason, renamed any of my client references to XYZCO. So we have the XYZCO production server XML file that we're taking a look at right now. So, and I'll show you the code, because the code is very interesting, and then I'll show you the impacts of the code. We're not gonna watch it all the way through. But if we take a look here at what it's doing, it's actually going through and it's finding each of the different aliases. Whenever you create a dependency, there's an alias associated with it. But there's a trick that I learned from using multiple different times of having to go through this manually. So what his code is actually doing is going through and it's parsing through these. Oh, wrong one. Thank you, hold on a sec. Clean up. Thank you very much. All right, so it's going through, it's incrementing the version associated with it, and what he's doing is he's finding the alias, and then there's a trick. If you search on the alias with an exclamation point, and there's anything that has an alias with the exclamation point at the end, that means something is referencing that dependency. So what he's actually doing within the PowerShell script is he's finding those that are not having another reference further on, and then stripping them out. So what I've got running right now, as you can see, is the PowerShell script for this. It has found, and I took literally the most real-world complex one that I could find. This management pack has 60-plus dependencies associated with it. So there's a lot of stuff. So let me show you what it looks like before and after, because we're not going to wait as it's going its way through it. I'm going to import a management pack. And I'm going to go from the original area. So if I grab my unfiltered version of this, and by the way, you will see a fail on both of these. It's on purpose. Now, we could count through each one of these if you would like to, but I will tell you right now, there's 40 dependencies in this environment that this pack has to have before it could actually run. And we really, really don't want to add some of these. So if we take a look, and now let's remove that one. I'm going to add it after the cleanup has been done. And I still error as expected. Our management pack count for dependencies is actually cut in half. So we had 20 different management packs that were put in there over history that didn't need to be there anymore. And this allows us to be able to cleanly clear these things out. We don't have to see them anymore. So, all right. And a clap to the guy who wrote it. I'll tell you the behind-the-scenes story on that. I wanted to get a developer for a couple of days because I was faced with a project where we had 111 of these things we had to do. I said, give me a developer for a couple of days. I'm sure we can put this together. I mentioned this to one of my guys who's a scripter just in spare time that, you know, I'd really love to be able to do this. He wrote it in his spare hours, sent me a copy of it, and that's what we're seeing today. So I love the community, the people that are out here in this audience. This is what we do. So the second one I want to be able to show you is an addition. All right, so we're now in a different demo environment. And you can tell a couple of things from looking at this. The first you can tell is the fact that, obviously, I have a lot of virtuals that I powered off, or my home lab is not in a very healthy state. We're going to ignore all of that. Everything that's gray, we're not paying attention to right now. What I want to point out of note here is all the warnings that are sitting in here. So I've got a whole lot of different systems that are in a warning state with an alert that caused that warning state to occur. There we go. So what that alert actually is, and I'm going to give you three examples of where this is relevant. So I've seen situations, how many people know what happens? You install, and actually this one will be for a first answer from the crowd gets whichever, in any of the things up here as a giveaway at the end. So who can tell me what flurry of alerts you get on a Sunday at 3 o'clock in the morning after installing your normal management packs? Defrag, I got it right there first, bingo. And I had a close one up there as well. Defragmentation management pack, almost every server across the board. Now, I'll hold on that for just a second and say, there are a whole lot of different ways to look at defrag. I actually wrote a blog post on it. There's 5 different ways that I see companies look at defrag. You may want to turn them off, you may want to do something with it. My pack actually automates the process to defragment those, so you can do that. But there, obviously, the first time you come in and you see hundreds of yellow alerts, it's not a good moment. So you can reset all of those monitors if you need to. The second example I'm going to show you here is what happens if you screw up and write a bad rule. So what you're seeing here right now, this is operations manager failed to read from a specific event log. This may be familiar to some people here as well. So for some odd reason, some idiot wrote a rule, and I've done this in production too, not for this particular name, created a rule and put a wrong event log name, left the rule enabled, activated it, and what happens is every single server in your environment goes warning state, rolls the health up for every single one of them. So it's trying to find the existence of a TechEd 2014 event log. Needless to say, there is no TechEd 2014 event log. So there are some different utilities that we can use to be able to handle that situation, but I'm going to show an example here. This is the second script that we've got, which does a reset monitor state. This was written by John Curtis out of the DFW Smug user group and enhanced as well by Matt. And I'm going to hopefully pass it the name of the monitor. So I can find the monitor here if I go through a Health Explorer. Partway through, failed accessing the Windows event log, and I go to the monitor properties, just so there's no smoke and mirrors on this. You can see failed accessing Windows event log. So I'm going to go to PowerShell, and I'm going to tell it, I want you to go fix those. So while that is running, I'll go ahead and pull that one up. It's running in the background. All right, so the reset monitor script is very simple. A couple of parameters, defaults in terms of who your management server is going to be. To localhost, but you can specify a parameter, give us the name of it as you saw. So what it just did there, executed my PowerShell script, and given a couple of minutes, we have cleared out almost all of those alerts. And if we go to the Windows computer view, we can now refresh this, and I should start to see green start to come back. Don't you all love live demos? I swear they will go green. We'll come back to it. Oh, there we go. There we go. All right. So pretty cool. All right. So that's our removal of obsolete dependencies and what we can do with that. So next up, hopefully, I'm going to see almost every hand on this one. How many people out there have heard of the Research This Management Pack? Okay, like 2%. There we go. All right. This is probably going to be one of the quickest, easiest ways to make your life a little bit easier. It's free. It is the simplest pack on the planet. It includes like a few tasks and a couple of views. It is truly a simplistic management pack. And the reason why I know that is I wrote it. I'm definitely not a good MP author. We've got one in-house, and you're going to meet him in a little bit when I pull him up. But this does a very good benefit. How many times do you take a look at an alert, you read the Microsoft product knowledge, and you go, I don't really know what I'm going to do with that. So what do you do? Come on. This will be my second giveaway. What do you do? The first thing you do, other than research this. So, bang. Okay, hold on. I heard a bang over there. Was it in the front? All right, sorry. Easier to hear the folks in the front. I apologize. All right, so you get second round. So yes, Bing, Google, things of that nature. The Research This Management Pack lets you take an alert, right-click on it, do a lookup on it, see what's out there with it. We have a community repository that we've got at System Center Central with thousands of alerts that we've worked on. But Bing and Google, they have the stuff that you're looking for, so they'll help you to be able to debug this quickly. It's free. It's on System Center Central. It's actually even referenced in the Microsoft Management Pack catalog, the website version of the catalog. Another piece that I wish Microsoft would actually increment or include within the product, but they haven't yet, is the concept of scheduled maintenance mode. So we can go to the console, highlight a group of servers or objects that we want, right-click on it, put them into maintenance mode for a time frame, but we can't schedule it to make that happen. Now, what this is, again, you're going to hear the probably 10th time from me today, why I love the Operations Manager community. A young lady who's in the audience today saw my PowerPoint deck up and what was going to be coming today, and she sent me feedback and let me know where this pack or where this particular solution, the one that I'm showing on here, where it works well, where it doesn't work well. So she had some excellent feedback on that. I'll give my synopsis of her summary. Works really well from an administrator perspective, may need a little bit of work on the operator perspective. Would you agree? Is that summarizing you properly? All right, I'm getting a nod on that. That's good. So his tool is a paid tool, just so you know, it's not that expensive. The guy who wrote it may even be in the audience today because I know he's a tech ed today. It does a pretty good job, something you can check out for a little while. Check it out for free, I think, and schedule your maintenance mode. You can do some of this through PowerShell, and if you're going to ask Microsoft, they're going to tell you Orchestrator. So you could use Orchestrator for this as well. So I asked, did a blog post before this, and I asked the community for what they would like to see within this type of a session, and this is one of the big points that came up. With as complex as Operations Manager can be at times, how do we know if it's healthy? How do we know if it's doing what it's supposed to be doing? So the links that are here are the ones, there's some of them that I use, and then other ones that other people have recommended. So the System Center Central Health Check Reports, again, free. Easy to be able to use. Behind the scenes, how that actually happened is Kevin Holman actually wrote a series of SQL queries that were checking general health information for Microsoft and some of the stuff they were doing. Those got surfaced into the community into pre-built reports, which Oscar Landman wrote, I believe, and put those out there. They're great. They work really well. They'll give you things like your top five alerts by repeat count and all that type of stuff. Good to let you know. There's also a second set of reports there I mentioned, some stuff that's on CodePlex. The PAL stuff, and then just from a hands-on perspective, you oftentimes get the question of why is it so slow? You know, it's slow loading the console, it's slow doing this and the rest of it. Having spent a whole lot of hours, days, weeks, and months figuring out it's slow, I can give you two or three key ones that I've seen so far. The first is, don't put management servers across a remote WAN link, especially anything with any degree of latency. Here's what happens. That management server is trying to write its data. It's going into the database. It's locking the database connectivity during the duration of that transaction. And until it lets go, that console's locked up. So trick number one, don't put a management server on the other side of a pond, especially with any degree of latency on it, from my perspective. Trick number two is, it is almost always the IOPS. Just the PAL tool he's talking about here is a good way to be able to look for this. You want to watch your IOPS, watch your disk queues, slow read writes, things like that. If you're seeing those types of situations, that's your most common slowdown. And I do recognize the fact that I'm talking about how do you diagnose, you know, bottlenecks within a product that's designed to tell you how to diagnose bottlenecks. So I do get that. So maybe a pre-canned all-in-one answer would be good for that. The next one, also submitted by the community, was alert routing. So you've got all these alerts. What do you do with them? So the alert update connector, if you're not familiar with it, is a way to be able to process through those alerts. I even did one a while back, different from the alert update connector, where I had a client that they actually had a subscription that would fire, that would write information history into it, so you could actually tell exactly what happened with that, what subscriptions were fired, and basically just look in the history for it. You also will hit, you know, I've got this alert, how do I get it to somebody? There is a little simple management pack that does alert forwarding. You can do, I think, the alert history subscriptions, the one I was talking about before. And then there's a couple of really good vendors here. I think it's maybe AlarmPoint, who I may not have listed, and then DirdAc is downstairs as well. They do the advanced types of stuff where you want to be able to say, I have this alert and I want it to go to this group, and if they don't do something on it within this time frame, I want it to go to this group. And a good conversation that I had again with another group of the ops manager administrators out here is that's a great one to motivate your support staff that's out there. Because when you, I heard the clap on that one. The folks that are out there, here's what's happening. Because right now, if you just send an email to them, call it out, what are they going to say? It's resolved, it's fine, override it. I never got it. There was no such alert. Why are you sending me spam? It's in a folder somewhere. Those are the types of things you hear, right? Yeah, so many of them, that type of stuff, very, very common. But if you're actually taking the effort to critical, you know, identify what's critical, and my definition of critical, by the way, is if it's important enough to wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning, if it is not important enough to wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning, it is officially not critical. So what they've done within these products is they can take these alerts, you send them to the team that's responsible for them, you give them a time frame to work on it, and then if they don't respond, then it goes up to their boss, and then up to their boss's boss. So what you get is they start coming to you and going, oh, yeah, I don't want this one. That one's okay. We don't want that one. They're going to resolve them more quickly. They're going to take ownership because they know their boss is going to get woken up in the middle of the night because they didn't respond to an alert. So now we're going to move into dashboards and operations manager. I'm going to show you a couple of slides, and then we're going to show you some of the built-in stuff through a demo of somebody that I'm going to introduce here in just a second. So allow me to introduce Mr. Brian Wren. How many people out there have heard of MP Author? Yeah, that's the man right there. If you're looking for documentation that's being provided on System Center, him and his team are the ones that are doing it and making it happen on a daily basis. He lives and breathes this stuff. I'll tell you the behind the scenes on the demo that he's gonna show you here in a few slides. I came to him, I sent him an email and told him about the session that I was doing, and I asked him if he would do a dashboarding with the new UR2 widgets and show what we could kind of do with it. He says, yeah, we can do that. So it was yesterday, right?
Yeah, in a couple hours.
Yeah, oh, a couple hours, yeah. It'll take a couple of hours. So we met up at 9 o'clock in the morning.
And it should have taken an hour. I made bonehead moves.
No, yeah. it was beautiful. So, but by end of day, we had what you're going to see here in a functional dashboards in a minute. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kick it over to him in just a minute, but let me go through just a couple of dashboard slides so you can get some ideas what we've got out there. So the dashboarding stuff in Ops Manager, even pre-UR2, is pretty good. It's actually working relatively well. I will give a cheap trick if you haven't heard of this already. There's a widget called Objects by Performance. Y'all familiar with Objects by Performance? All right. You ever use it and it provides absolutely no data? Yeah. All right. Here's the deal. We've got a blog on that one also. It's all blogs.catapultsystems.com. There's a problem. There's a bug in the SQL code. There's a simple fix that you can tweak in that will actually allow it to be able to return records correctly. So once you tweak the SQL code properly, it works like a champ. So that one should help out if you're ever using that widget, because I love the widget. I just need it to work all the time. So you can see our regular dashboards, the networking type dashboards that we build into it, vicinity views. So we can do all of that type of stuff. Again, back to the community. Microsoft was saying, we're going to give you dashboards, we're going to give you widgets, and now they've really started delivering on that promise, which is great. But there's been a lot of the community people that have stepped in and started taking this first. The first one is actually the Windows Server Operating System team. I think it was Satya. Do you remember if it was Satya?
I think so.
Did that one? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Satya from the product team released that one. It's a targeted widget, so you can actually run, you can execute off of different objects that you see, which is very nice. The virtual machine manager, I can say that because I wrote it. Actually, I think it's pretty cool. SharePoint 2010, Exchange 2010, Active Directory 2008. And then two of a mention here. First is I've got a dashboard series that's listed there. And then the second one at the bottom is if you've ever wanted to use an old style 2007 dashboard in 2012, you may have noticed if you do right click and you try to create a new, there's no option to do that. So I created a sample pack that allows you to be able to download all of those dashboards and then you just copy and paste them and you can still use them. So pretty cool piece of functionality. As a other piece on the dashboarding, there's two things that we use on a regular basis. The first is your NOC view type dashboards. You see the one that's Civision Live Maps on one side. We use this to be able to mock up our own data centers as well as we do this for clients. You can see the colorations that you see on it was actually built off of the colorations of this particular client. There's Catapult Systems in this case, my employer. So we've used this for their geographical maps as well. It's not shown at the moment, but we've been demoing those as well. So if you haven't seen the live map stuff, definitely check that out because it brings some good stuff to the table. And then this is the GSM stuff that I mentioned before. So GSM allows us to be able to see the locations of those and geotag servers. So just as one more good Ops Manager Trivial Pursuit point, be very, very careful when you're cutting and pasting latitude and longitude coordinates in power or into the PowerShell, which identifies a location. I spent a solid 4 hours trying to figure out why all my stuff was on the other side of the planet. It turns out that a dash or an underscore is not a minus or a dash is not a minus or something like that, so it translates into a positive. So just FYI, check your code really careful before you use those out there. I think I got one more, and then I'm going to hand off to the demo meister over here. So within Catapult, again, we have a team, a BI team that does lots of different dashboarding solutions. The Exchange one that you can see here right now, and is an example of one. It allows us to be able to show the overall health state of your queuing, your drive space, things of that nature, quick and easy, as well as the individual components. And then you can see our Operations Manager one that we've mocked up as well. So your top alert counts, disk space, or free space associated with your drive, things like that. So if you want to talk at all about how you can extend beyond what's available in the box, that's an area that we work on regularly. And with that, I am going to hush,
is it me?
Move off to the side, and give you control and let you drive this show.
Cool. So basically what I'm going to show here, it sounds like some people were in the dashboard session a couple days ago that Ryan Benson did. Ryan is actually the guy who writes the widgets. So Cameron was giving me a lot of credit for creating something cool yesterday, and quite honestly, it was Ryan who enabled all that by giving us the widgets for it. But basically, in talking with those guys, they said, look, we're getting requests all over the place for this, that, and the other thing. Rather than try to create this, that, and the other thing, why don't we basically enable everybody to create their own? Right. Let's start with, let's give you some core functionality and basically a platform that we can build a lot of customized stuff on it. So we have the ability to go running off. I'm not a developer. I can write management packs all day long in XML, but I'm not going to go and write custom widgets. And so that's basically what I'm going to show here. This whole thing we put together, yesterday we sat down and said new dashboard. It would have been a couple hours if I didn't make some bonehead moves, but I think I've cleared those out. But everything you see, I'm going to actually package up, make available. Like sometime next week, I'll have this posted, download it. All the samples we have here, the web server stuff, everything that we've shown on the dashboard, we're going to make available. So in any event, to let you know what's going on here. And the other thing that basically, some things I'll do similar to what Ryan showed, but try to put in a little bit more context. In some ways, I told Ryan that I think you showed some really cool stuff, but I don't think you sounded excited enough. So as I'm showing this, don't look so much as, oh, look, you're displaying a computer. Look, you're displaying the disks on the computer. Think of how we're doing that, because this actually solves a lot of requests that we get all the time, right? I mean, really think in terms of the implications of what we're showing here. But if you think basically up to date, dashboards, there were two fundamental things that we couldn't do. One is we couldn't do anything contextually. So in other words, I click on one item in the dashboard, something else changes. I click on this computer, I see alerts for it, right? Basically, that starts to make things a lot more dynamic and interesting. The other core thing we couldn't do was write a script, right? I can give you alert widgets and object widgets and all this, but you're going to be confined to a certain basically what data that returns. The moment I let you write a script, you can put anything. We're showing kind of the standard stuff here, objects. I'm not necessarily showing, I'm showing a little bit of perf data over there. But if you think in terms, I could show subscriptions on here, I could show rules, I can show anything that PowerShell is going to allow me to get. All right, so that's really what's interesting. You could do that stuff. I have had a sample out there from last year's MMS demo that's been out there for a year. The amount of work it takes to build that in depth and line and line and line of XML is big. I'll show you the scripts and this, everything we built here, simply sitting right in the ops console. And I'll show you the scripts. It's really not a whole lot of complexity. So the whole thing is basically driven off this one guy up here, which is the new PowerShell grid widget. Basically, I write some PowerShell code. We're going to automatically return the results in a table for you. Right there, I'm just showing the computers in the environment. This is just one computer in the environment, so it might look a little more interesting if I showed multiple. But if I show you the script returning this, this is tiny. Right, and this is just PowerShell stuff. You know, sit down, write a PowerShell script, run it on a command line, returns data you want. That's what you can throw in. The only thing that we're going to need from you is this script context line here, basically, which says, take this information, put it out into this object the dashboard can understand. That's been documented. We actually have some stuff coming out next week that's really going to clean that up. So really not a lot of complexity there to format it for the dashboard. But if you look at that and think this is just a PowerShell script, notice when I click on this, though, I'm seeing alerts related to this computer. I'm over here looking at tasks related to computers. If I click over here on disk, I'll get to that one in a minute. That's also running on PowerShell. Notice I don't have any alerts, but because there are no alerts associated with it, but now I have disk tasks. In other words, we understand what type of object this is. You're just writing PowerShell code, and I'm returning something. The widget is figuring out it's this particular class. Here's all the context that goes along with that class, right? Which is actually very cool. So what I'm doing here, the other one I'll show next, this is the new contextual health widget. Basically, this says for whatever object you have selected, show me the monitors. These are actually unhealthy monitors only. I've got it crammed kind of into that little pane there, but I can easily just go and say show all monitors. But what's interesting, this one actually has no configuration at all associated with it. Basically, drop it in there, anything you select on the dashboard, I'm going to show you the health associated. If I click a disk over here, we're going to see all of the, it's they're healthy only because there's nothing going wrong with them, but I'm going to look at all those monitors for it. So again, this one, zero configuration. I could configure there's nothing to do, right? That, I could have built that a year ago. It would have taken me a week, probably. So anyway.
And can I point out something on that? If I could point out something on that one. Over.
If you have.
If your... I could point out something on that one.
Notice the fact that it's got the state of the different drives and the performance metrics associated with the other drive.
I was going to show that now.
Sorry. All right.
You're totally stealing my thunder.
I'm sorry, man, but it's too cool. I had to point it out. Because those of us who've been doing this forever, that doesn't go together. That's never gone together. That's the power
no,
of this. But go ahead, show them how it works.
Man. I've been asked for that since like MOM 2000. Can you show me like mixed state data with perf data? And we flat out couldn't do it. Obviously, I write a PowerShell script, I can do it. Okay. What this is basic, same thing. These are both the PowerShell grid widget. This is a contextual one. In other words, when I click, if I clicked another computer, you'd see the disk change, but you'll have to take my word for it. But if I show the script on this one, a little bit longer just because I'm having to get script data from it, all I do is add this parameter to the script called global selected items. Select anything on the dashboard, global selected items gets populated with that. We can multi-select as well, right? So in this case, I'm just taking from that item, and then basically, I forget the script off the top of my head, but there should be a get related objects in there. It's basically saying whatever computer you have selected there, go and collect the disk associated with it. Then go out and collect some perf data associated with those disks, return it out in PowerShell. And again, all we have to do at the end, I add it to this return collection, we're good to go, right? It's handling the formatting, it's handling putting it to the table. And again, these are actual disk objects that interact with the rest of the console, right? So we're able to mix data together. Again, this could, I could be reaching out to some other system completely external. I could be reaching out to a file on disk. I could have a list that says, show me all the rules that are associated with this one. Anything I can write in PowerShell, I can push out, right? Totally done. I didn't do any MP magic XML silliness on the back end to do any of this, okay?
about like if we wanted to query SQL? Could we do like a SQL database query or something
if
like that?
If I can do it in PowerShell, absolutely, right? Yeah, I mean, do a SQL query. Sure. Mix that data together, I return it at a table.
Okay.
Right? So very, very good. Once they give me the ability to write a script, I'm off and running. You could do this before, and I'm sure, has anybody seen the sample we did last year in the lines and lines of XML that I tried to make it reasonably, but this is actually, it was that session when they showed it, and then I went and took it and added some things to it and put out the sample. They looked at it and realized, wow, we have to make that easier. So in any event. So let me show the other one, and then the last one I think is the coolest. So this is contextual alert, right? Click on this, get the alerts back. Again, nothing special going on here. The only configuration I have to give is some criteria. What kind of alerts do you want? What right? I mean, standard filter items for the alerts. What fields do you want in it? I think Cameron was especially interested in the is monitor alert one, right?
That
was
yeah. Can I run with that for a second then as we're going
absolutely.
Through it? So how many people are familiar with the benefit of the is monitor alert? All right. So some of you. So those of you who have not heard this yet, this is very, very helpful. So within an alert view, when you create an alert view, the only way you can tell if an alert is generated by a rule or a monitor is to look at the details pane down at the bottom or to open it up and go into the properties of it. You may say, why do we care? Well, we care because of the rule of the monitor. The rule of the monitor says that anytime you have an alert that comes from a rule, you can close those alerts and they will reoccur. If you do the same thing with a monitor, they probably will not reoccur because they're still sitting in that state. They're only going to notify when they re-change that state. So it's very confusing for an operator to be able to look at an individual alert or a series of alerts in bulk and figure out which ones can I close, which ones can I, you know, what do I do with all of this? So if you create a dashboard view with the alert widget, you group it by the is monitor alert, you can now easily see which ones are from a, which ones are from a rule and which ones are from a monitor. So really good tip for your ops manager administrators out there, their operator type guys. So
cool. So again, that's just one of the contextual ones you kind of get for free, right? There's not a heck of a lot for me to talk about it because just added in. And by the way, I did do all the content for all the new widgets, all the script ones. I gave some basic stuff if anybody's seen it. I mean, I really didn't have to provide anything for the alert widget. You drag it in, you guys will figure it out. There's very little you're going to learn from me on that one. All the script stuff, though, that's next week I'll have out. Okay, so this one's particularly interesting. So Ryan showed this. We also did a lab on totally how to build this thing. But this heat map down here. So here's what's really, really interesting about this. And this is one where we can really start to think about customizations that we can build with this. So this is actually PowerShell web browser. All right, so we have a web browser widget that says just drop it and go get a web page, and we can actually include some parameters to pass to the web page. This is one done through a script. So PowerShell script, I create a request object, I go out and pull the HTML back. But what's interesting about this, so this is a heat map for this object, and a heat map just says, hey, for all objects related to the one that is selected, show me some graphic image representing its state, right? And so we see all the, we have green, gray, and yellow, they're representing that. And it's not so much, hey, look, a heat map, it's more thinking in terms of a demo of what's happening here. And again, we're going to package this one up and put it out. What's happening is when I select this, script is running that I'll show in a moment, passes off to a web server. Web server is actually receiving this the data about, I'm about to point at the screen like I've never freaking presented, about that computer object is being sent in a post request to the web server. It gets it as JSON data. And then so from there, straight up web development. Right, there is nothing on the web server, no special components. Our example is all IIS, ASPX. You could do it on anything. Basically, this is just HTML coming back. Now, what's really interesting about this, if I go and have a look, for instance, the yellow one here, I understand that's a SQL server, right, that's gone yellow. If I select that, I should see alerts related to that. Oh, I will, I promise. Because this is the part that I thought Ryan didn't get excited enough about. It's your environment.
I know.
There we go.
It's okay. There. See, it came up.
but realize, I just selected that. I got the alerts associated with that SQL server. I have SQL tasks. If I was in some other widget, you wouldn't be overly impressed. You say, great, that's the way it returns. This is HTML. This is a web page coming back, like a web page coming in a browser I'm clicking, and the environment around it understands what's going on. The only thing required to make that happen is about four little lines of JavaScript that are being sent down to the client. So basically, the way we can do some interaction with that, by the way, I can do context menu, right? I mean, that's HTML, that's a web page, right? Just to prove it, if I click down here, that's your standard IE right-click, right? I mean, the standard IE context menu. So we understand these individual objects and what they are. So that's being done, little tiny bit of JavaScript. We also can throw down a link, just your standard HTML link, user click here. But we have a console protocol that when the web page builds the link, that we can do things like open a dashboard, run a task, so full interaction. So what's really interesting about this is we're looking to do, you know, the PowerShell grid widget says basically here's new data you can send back. But you don't have a whole lot of option how you're going to format. It's a table format. How do you do new visualizations and graphical visualizations and all that? We've got some information on how to build a custom widget. It's, I think, set a record on the TechNet Wiki for the longest article. And at the end, you get a yellow and a red circle is basically what it gives you. This is straight up web development, right? Every single developer is going to know how to do this stuff. So it really enables some interesting. And the other thing is this is primarily running back on the web server. So if you think, I'm not having to create a custom widget, send it out to all the consoles, run it locally, all that's simply, we can extend this environment basically by dropping in a new web page and then a script. I'll show the script in a minute, but we just, because we did this pretty quick, we thought we'd do something even cooler.
I like this part. This is my personal favorite. This is one.
So what we did is added, since remember, that's just a web browser. This kind of shows that off. It's running a little slow right now for whatever reason. Of course, before I got up here, I didn't. It was just snappy as could be. So something's going on. But when I select that alert there, we thought, you know, if I select an alert, the heat map doesn't make any sense related to an alert. And we lost our connectivity. It was so cool, too.
Hit it again.
Okay,
or hit a different one.
I'll say what it does, and you'll have to take my word for it. Yeah, look, our network connectivity's gone. So basically what happens there is we take the alert name and we pass it off for a Bing lookup, right? So when Cameron was talking about, you know, researching an issue, looking it up on Bing, Google, the whole bit, this basically we're doing that right in the dashboard. And that's just doing a simple, we're just building the GET request, right? Here's a GET request, here's the parameters where I, you know, alert name and just building your standard URL to pass to Bing, and that's coming back, right?
All right, so we won't hold up on that one much longer. That was one of the coolest ones associated with it, so my apologies on the fail on that. I don't know why we left.
You can actually see, though, that's the web, right? I mean, you can imagine what that looks. All you would see is Bing with the alert name in it, and I promise it works.
So what it basically allows you to do is you highlight that alert, just as I mentioned before with research this, where you could, at that point, use a task to execute it. So in this case, all we're doing is we're just highlighting the object, and it's now bringing it to a web browser, and within that web browser, it's doing the query that's going to help us to find, okay, I've got this alert, what am I supposed to do with this alert? So that's one of the ones that I thought was a very cool one that we will prove via sample does work.
It is working.
Yes, it is working.
Code working.
My connectivity.
Your connectivity has issues.
All right.
And this is having a little issue. I just did configure to show the script. Okay. Just because, again, I'm not going to sit here and step through the script, step line by line, but just to give you an idea, just give you a feel for how this is. Basically, all I remember, global selected items. That's the way that you make a script contextual is just throw that. In fact, just a bit on that. Throw that parameter into a script. Basically, what the widget will do is anytime something is selected on the dashboard, the script will run. It'll basically refresh, so that way we can catch any new selected object. From there, I'm just saying go and get an alert. If it is an alert, great. I'll have an alert I can work with. If not, I'm null because it's an object. So I'm saying if it's null, there's the code that runs. All that code is doing, you can see there's the URL that I'm calling. This is simply just setting up the post request. Right, I add post data in, that tells me it's a post request. The moment I do that return collection, we actually make the request. Nothing special, just a simple post request. The other sample we're going to put out, this is actually sending to a custom web page that we understand what data is coming in. Like I said, we're sending back that other custom HTML. This could be a standard post request to some other external web page as well. Right, and we'll have some code samples on how to do that. If it is an alert, then here is the code that's building that request, right? Some script context stuff that we're documenting, so you'll know how to do it. And you can see it's just basically setting up the parameters to be added to the end of the URL. So this is full code, right? This is all done just sitting in the ops console. I mean, it's a text box, so to be true, I went to the PowerShell editor, wrote it up there, and then pasted it in. But that's about the full complexity. So what is happening on the back end here? We actually did a lab a couple days ago on how to build this heat map. Yes, you got red. There's something going on in the box. But we basically have the step-by-step in Visual Studio how to build that heat map in C#. Not much code at all, right? I'm going to take, in addition to packaging all this up, we're going to package up the code for that heat map, and I'm even going to take the step-by-step walkthrough that we did in the lab. We'll get that cleaned up. We'll put that out as well. So just the final note, again, up until to now, if you've looked up content that we've got out on dashboards and all that, it's kind of erratic. It was just kind of here's something and here's something and here's something and see if you guys can figure this out. Now that this stuff really kind of connects the dots for us in terms of that overall experience, all that stuff's going to get restructured. So if you start looking around next week, I'll have all the script samples, all the downloads, the whole bit. We're even doing it. It's going to be MP, aka MS, MP author slash dashboards. I'm going to do a custom URL. But all that's going to get cleaned up. So you're going to see a much more proper story for the whole dashboard story. So.
All right, so let me thank you, Brian, man. I mean, my commitment is to the audience, before the end of the day today, I will send you a screenshot of this with the lookup working at the bottom of it. Trust me, we worked on this for a while. Oh, he did the work, I just watched. It was pretty cool. Two other examples that I think would be very good to be able to consider on this. The first is, he mentioned a great one around rules and monitors. That's a commonly asked question. So if we had the ability to be able to pick an individual object and see within one pane what rules are applied to it, what monitors are applied to it, that's pretty cool. Another guy who's sitting in the audience right now had a great example of, I'd like to be able to quickly determine what subscription information is out there. Give me all of the subscription channel, all that type of stuff. We can get it out there, we can pop it in there. So it's good information to be able to add. So. That's what we got, and I will let it be. We will let it go. Screenshot later, promise. Thank you, Brian. All right, so with that, I have a couple things before we go to wrap-up and Q&A time frame. So the last part of this is, for those of you who've seen my blog or read the Unleashed series or any of that type of stuff, you would probably realize the fact that I spend way, way too much time dealing with the words operations manager. So this is kind of lifeblood for me, what I do. So one of the negatives associated with operations manager kind of being your lifeblood is the fact that you end up spending your entire time sitting in front of a console. Ops manager console is not necessarily the most fun place to hang out on a daily basis, in the opinion of some people. So my wife being one of those. So she actually found this one very interesting as well. I had a chance to be able to check out, I did a dashboard mobile series with all the different vendors that I could find out there, and a lot of them are represented today. And I'll tell you flat out, this was cool. This was one of my favorites. So I have an iPad, unashamed, it's sitting up here right now. It's right next to my Surface. So yeah, I see at least one person shaking their head in the audience. I know that. He says no fruit in his house. So didn't seem right to me, but hey. So with this, I was actually able to open up my operations manager environment. I was able to see the alerts that were occurring. I was able to build my own dashboards and see what was going on, and all that's cool. What I thought was really cool was the fact that I could actually integrate with the environment and execute tasks. So I had an out, service down type situation. I could open it up in my iPad or my Android device and could execute tasks to restart services and do all that type of stuff. So full type of modular access to the things that we're used to doing within the console itself. So there's a whole series of vendors out there that have solutions for it. Again, it's up on blogs, Catapult Systems, but this one was one of my favorite. The two that you see here at the moment, you've got the smaller one is off of my Android phone. So it's just a simple dashboard that I put together to be able to see total runtime. The one next to it is an equivalent one where I could do open alerts associated with it and any processor utilization with those systems. So again, walk it, execute it, roll with it. It's very nice. So think about that as you're going forward. It doesn't always have to be within the Ops Manager console proper. The second one I wanted to mention, because this is a very unique idea. It's a group, the application's called My Operations. I don't believe they're here this week. And at the moment, it actually takes a custom integration to be able to install it in your labs, but they helped me with it in my labs to see it in the production environments. The reason why theirs is very interesting is the fact that it spans components. So what you're actually looking at here is a dashboard solution that's connecting up to both Operations Manager and Service Manager. And it's pulling back data on both of those. So you can see kind of your heat map type information as well, dashboarding, performance metrics, all of that type of stuff. So again, if you get a chance, you can step away from the Operations Manager console, and it doesn't have to just be the web console. So with that, I have just a couple of quick FYIs. You know, if you're not already following at least a couple of the blogs on this list, save yourself a whole lot of time and follow at least a couple of the blogs on this list. I will tell you flat out, Marnix Wolf has answered far, far more questions than I probably ever have. I use his blog on a daily basis. He's a great guy and writes a lot of good stuff. Kevin Holman, not as much, but when he writes, it is stuff that you absolutely need to know about. He's very good on that. Kevin Green's an up-and-comer within the Operations Manager space, and then I got to put my own up there because I'd really love you to come check out the blog, as you can tell. Well, with that, so related content, just as an FYI, and we'll go back and open up for Q&A. So I will be down at the bookstore from 12:30 to 1, and I'm also going to be in the server cloud tools area. If you all have seen that great big screen that's down there with the check-in and check-out. So I would like to ask you all first, before we go to Q&A, the favor of, if you would please, fill out your evaluations. I'm going to shamelessly steal a quote that I heard out of the last session. The reason why we get to speak, and I love doing this, is I think y'all can tell, I love doing this, I enjoy it. The reason why we get to speak is because y'all ask us to be here. So please fill out the evaluations, let them know, you know, let us know constructive feedback, what can we do better, what you liked, things of that nature. Let them know if you would like me to be able to come back, or this will be my last Tech Ed presentation. So with that, I'd like to thank you all very much and open it up for Q&A.